there is a status from Linda Jo. And the status on there talking about performers at Lacage and what's so great about Lacage and blah, 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 blah. And there's so many people ranting and raving on the status that it's kind of sickening, in all honesty.
You're listening to Too Soon Podcast.
What's up, everyone? My name is Linda Jo. I am loud, sometimes aggressive, and I do live for the drama. You can call me Linda Sojourner Truth or Linda Controversy Ho if you're nasty. And that's on Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Hey, it's Belia Marvel, Wisconsin's favorite drag superhero. I'm here to keep you up to date on what's popping in pop culture. You see what I did there? No, but seriously, stick around because it's going to be a good episode.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Too Soon. I'm super excited about this episode. Later on, we have an interview with Eddie Danger.
Sexy.
Yes. We're going to talk about a bunch of shit happening in news, pop culture, and, you know, whatever other controversial topics we want to talk about. Oh, I think we might even do a little Drag Race recap, catch up type thing.
That sounds great. Congrats to, you know, we're going to talk about the winner of UK season 2 and some other hot news that's happening in the Drag Race sphere, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, it might be a whole new series in the multitude. What do you call it? It's like the Drag Race universe.
Yeah, I don't even, girl, the Drag Race diaspora. No,
should we call it the DRU, Drag Race universe? Like,
at this point, yeah.
Okay. But anyway, you know, like as we do every week, we're going to start off with Too Soon. And Malaya, I think you got a topic.
I have a perfect topic and I am super excited to talk about it. Is it too soon to declare Cardi B the winner in her 12-year feud with Candace Owens? Because the dragging that she put on her in this past week, it was worthy of Cardi B, and she let Candace Owens know exactly where she stands. I don't know. How much did you hear about that, Linda? Did you?
I didn't hear about it, but aside from you telling me about it, So I really don't know what happened, but I do know that Cardi B loves to, you know, she's a messy bitch who lives with the drama like I am. So anytime that Candace tries to come at her, because this isn't the first time, she's always clapped back. And I know Twitter will go up for Cardi.
Well, you know, it's been, you know, at this point in the making for a while, just because they've had back and forth over the years. But recently, you know, the Grammys, that's a big deal. And we're starting to see a shift in the Grammys where they're actually starting to show a little bit more respect, in a sense, to urban acts. So, you know, WAP was the big performance of the night. Like, that's what people really wanted to see, you know, Megan and Cardi, and conservatives had a lot to say about it, Miss Owens included. And she was on Fox News, Tucker Carlson's show, and they were speaking on the performance. In my mind, they were conflating a lot of things that weren't really relevant to the performance, but they were saying that the performance was perverse and that they were trying to basically corrupt young women in America, and saying that Cardi was trying to destroy the fabric of traditional American values by simulating lesbianism on the Grammys main stage. Because if you did see the performance, Cardi and your girl Meg, I know you love Meg, you know, they was dipping and doing it, and they was getting a little dirty. And I loved it. Like, if you don't want your kids to see that type of material, maybe they shouldn't be watching the Grammys, when you know there are artists who do create content that is more geared towards adults. And, you know, they just had a little bit of back and forth where Cardi ended up reposting segments of the conversation that Candace Owens was having and basically trolling her, in the sense of, she was like, yes, girl, thank you for putting me on Fox News, because now, you know, you guys are going to help me get to, you know, 6 times platinum. And they just had a little bit of back, not even a little bit of back and forth. They went in. And there was just a lot of digs taken at each other. Cardi compared our previous first lady, saying, well, girl, if you're so bothered by WAP, I was just inspired by your girl, our previous first lady. In my personal opinion, I don't think Cardi is what Candace wants, because Candace tries to keep things very, quote unquote, respectable and professional in a sense. And she thinks she leads with like this level of intelligence. If I talk to Cardi in a way where it comes off like my grammar is better than yours and I'm very, you know, she's bougie in a sense. She thinks that means that she's doing something better. And Cardi had to let her know, no, my songs are taking off and I'm one of the most popular celebrities in the world. And everything that you say is just helping me. But that was my take on it.
Yeah, I think it's all like, you know, Candace is a scam artist. I don't believe anything that comes out of her mouth is genuine. I don't think her feelings about Cardi B are genuine. I don't think that her feelings about being Republican and all her like, you know, conservative beliefs and all that trash, I don't think any of it's real. I think she's a con artist. She's a scammer. And she is doing this because she knows that she will gain attention and will get notoriety and how, you know, maybe even make more money from dumb white people who think that she really believes the things that are coming out of her mouth. But there's no way in hell that she actually genuinely believes the things that are coming out of her mouth.
I agree. I feel like she does a lot of things for shock value. In the best way of putting it, she's like the quintessential pick me. She's like, okay, I'm gonna say all the stuff that makes me like, I'm not like those other, I don't even know if I can say this word in the podcast, but you remember that little girl Treasure that was on Dr. Phil? Mm-hmm. She was like, I'm not like those other Negroes. Like, Candace gives me very much that energy. And I agree. I don't think she fully...
Candace gives me, I identify as a white woman.
All right. Come on, Stacey Dash. Tying things back. Ooh. Okay, I know this is off topic, but did you see that Stacey Dash is now talking about, I saw this earlier, she's talking about how she wants to start dating black men again, and apparently she has like her publicists and like her team reaching out to black celebrities to try and like set up dates.
Girl, it's
like, girl, we don't care anymore.
Child, I don't get it. I don't understand why, if she wants to have her like, you know, come to Jesus moment, she can have that. I don't really care to see it.
I don't need to see it.
I don't want to know. Go disappear and live your life in solitude. But your time is up, honey. You've already done enough damage and said enough things that like you can't unsay. You've empowered white people to feel the way they do about black people in a lot of ways. Her and Candace. And I do think that, you know, I don't care if they do decide to see the light or come back to the, you know, to their nigga side.
Right.
Like, you've already done enough damage emboldening people to feel and have these negative incorrect views of black people, these stereotypical views that you perpetuate.
Mm-hmm.
So Candace, she can pack it up. She can go on back to wherever the hell she came from. But I don't need the reconciliation. If they do it, I will laugh, though, because all these white people that was high-fiving them and, you know, feeling emboldened by them are going to feel real dumb when they turn around and be like, yeah, I was wrong about all the things I said.
Well, I think Candace, you know, it's funny to see what's happening because they're getting rid of Stacey on Fox. And I think I have to look. I might be misquoted, but I know that Candace is getting a show. And I think it's going to be on Fox, but it's crazy to see how they're switching them to, you know, they're basically switching positions. Like, Stacey's like, I want to be black again.
Mm-hmm. I thought Candace had a show. I thought she already had one. I might be wrong.
Because I'm pretty sure Cardi mentioned that when they were going back and forth, she was like, girl, you know, congrats on the new show. Plug me. Yeah.
Okay. What's the channel, though?
I don't even know. You knew she wasn't going to Atlanta.
Yeah, I don't see what channel.
Well, it looks like on the Daily Wire.
The Daily Wire, is that a channel?
I guess so. And it's going to be on Apple Podcasts too. So
is that like a internet channel?
I guess so.
It is. It's only online. I just saw a little ad for it, and it said exclusively on DailyWire.com.
Well, good for her.
Have fun with that, sis. I hope that you get tens of viewers, and I'm sure they'll all enjoy your internet show.
I will be happy to watch, you know, her show go triple trash bag in ratings, and I wish her all the success she deserves, which is none. I don't think it's too soon to say Cardi wore her out, and I hope Cardi walks her like a dog again on the internet after her show starts to do whatever it does.
Truly, it is not too soon to say that Cardi B... Well, maybe it is too soon to declare Cardi B the winner, only because there may be more fights And Cardi's going to continue to win those.
So we can say Cardi won this round. We'll see how the war ends up.
Yes, Cardi won this round for sure. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with late news.
Yes.
We finally got a name to call it because we're talking about shit that happened last week and last weekend. And, you know.
It's late.
Yeah, it's late, but it's still news and it's still important.
Happy y'all wouldn't know about some of the stuff if we wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah. All right. I'll see you guys in a few.
You're listening to Too Soon Podcast.
Never too late, never too late, never too late.
Well, I mean, if you're Brett Blamey, now it is.
Oh, what's up, everybody? We are back. It is time for late news here on Too Soon. And we are going to get to Brett Blamey. I think it's Blamey. It's Blamey, or I don't know if it's Blamey or Blomey or Blom. Who knows?
It's Blomey.
Oh, poor guy. Anyway, poor kids. I don't know. The first story I wanted to talk about was the Asian hate crimes happening in America. I know that was a sharp turn. But yeah, I think that this country is seeing a lot more of the underbelly of the racism because of our former president, Donald Trump, who has done nothing but escalate racial issues in this country. And I think him calling it calling it the China virus, or, you know, blaming COVID on China or, you know, Asian countries, I think that was very, very evil and it was irresponsible. And it led to these crazy white nationalists going out and attacking Asian Americans.
I 100% agree. I think as people of color, you and myself, like, we understand dog whistling, which is a big topic on here a lot of the time. And that was completely, you know, the whole campaign to call it the China virus and, you know, all of these racially motivated terms was a way for him to place blame with his base somewhere that wasn't with him. So he could distract from his, you know, shortcomings, you know, as president. Oh, no, 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 it's not my fault. You know, let's blame, you know, the Asian community. Let's blame China. And don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure they looked at certain when they were tracing the origins of different strains of Miss Rona, like some of the origins were coming from Europe. But I think because China took the measures that they did, people associated them with the virus heavily, and it wasn't fair. And I think that's why we saw what we saw in Atlanta, you know, with that young monster. I don't even want to call him a young man, but Robert Aaron, you know, and, you know, his attack on the spa and everything, and just things that aren't even actually real. Like, we can't call a virus the quote unquote China virus. That's just hate mongering.
Didn't the Spanish flu start in America?
Yeah.
And they call it the Spanish flu and it had negative connotations. And now, you know, I've been saying this a lot lately. White supremacy hurts everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I do like the messaging and the design, like, you know, the goal of stop AAPI hate. But what I'll say is we need to stop white supremacy.
We need more appreciation. It's just gross, like, seeing how disconnected we've become when it comes to, like, interactions between different racial groups.
Yeah. And, you know, I may not be able to speak on this issue as well as, you know, an Asian American or a Pacific Islander who has experienced that type of discrimination and hate. But what I can say as a minority is that this issue, it's not a new issue. It's just we haven't been paying attention to it.
And I think that ties into, I think I made a comment about this in one of our previous episodes, where we take positive imagery that's stereotypical and we think it's okay. What I mean by that is we'll talk about, like, certain stereotypes, like Asians are good at math. Excuse me, I know this isn't the most appropriate, but I'm just using these as examples, like a positive thing, quote unquote. And then it takes away from the real lived experience that Asian Americans have because we put them in this space where they're the good ones. They don't have problems. They're, they, you know,
they're the model minority.
Exactly. it's not reality. Just like any other community, Asians aren't a monolith. And I think one of the big issues that we're going to start unpacking in the years to come is this myth of, like you said, the model minority and how it has caused real issues that the Asian community faces to not be taken seriously. And, you know, it's sad to watch it. Another thing that really bothered me about this whole situation with the Atlanta situation, the young demon, I'm not going to call him a man.
The terrorist.
Exactly.
The domestic terrorist thug.
Exactly. Everything else they call us. There was so much quote unquote understanding for him. And I want to say they even said, oh, he was just having a bad day.
Yeah. I mean, do you go and kill 8 people when you having a bad day, Malaya?
Exactly. Not at all. I mean, I might go home and punch a picture of myself when I was in drag 5 years ago because I'm mad I used to look like that. But no, I don't want to kill nobody. I was listening to some of my other favorite podcasts, you know, which are primarily, you know, African-American people, this, that, and the other. And there's just, they pointed out some things that I've been thinking myself, that there ends up being this divisiveness that's created, like this rhetoric in the media where they start placing minority groups against each other. They'll like highlight anything that happens when it's like an Asian person who's being targeted, and then they'll highlight if something happens with, like, you know, young Black people or young Latino people or people who aren't white. But then when it comes to this situation where this man, you know, he has killed someone, he's killed 8 people. He was having a bad day.
Yeah. They're almost trying to make it seem like as if it wasn't a racially motivated hate crime,
yes,
which it clearly was. And even if they're not able to get him on a racially motivated hate crime, I believe in the state of Georgia, they would be able to get him on a hate crime based on gender, and it'll be mm-hmm. a whole lot harder for them to disprove that because, yeah, you know, his history of being, you know, a sex addict and, you know, or whatever the hell, and, you know.
Yeah. And one of the things that really bothered me about it, listening to some of the talks around it, people are trying to say that it wasn't racially motivated. You know, like you were saying, they were saying that he had a sex addiction. And I say this only because of this narrative that's being put out there, but people were trying to say that these spas in Atlanta are known for, you know, being up, being open after 1 a.m., if you know what I mean. And, you know, oh, you from the South, Linda, what do they say? What's open after 1 a.m.?
I don't know.
Oh, you had never heard an old Southern lady be like, the only thing open after 1 a.m. is legs.
Oh, you know what? I probably have heard that, but I literally was drawing a blank. I was like, the devil?
That's the narrative that people are trying to push now. They're trying to push this narrative now that, oh, it wasn't racially motivated. It was motivated by him being denied by, I guess, these women who were working in these locations. And he was more so upset because he was having his power taken away from him. He wasn't able to access them the way that he wanted to. So that's why he came in and shot these people. And another thing that really, really irks my spirit is people trying to say it wasn't racially motivated because some of the victims weren't Asian, but you're targeting Asian businesses and killing Asian people. And that to me just is, it's so disrespectful and so belittling to what the larger picture is. Like, don't move away from what this is. It was obviously a hate crime. And it was racially motivated. Whether or not, you know, he got to know these people through sex work or not, it was racially motivated. In other news, moving down to Tennessee, recently on the 15th, the state legislation and state senate in Tennessee voted on a bill that was proposed by an African-American state senator, Ramesh Akbari, to remove language in their constitution that allowed for slavery in the case of criminalization. And you would think this is something that people would unanimously agree to remove, but there were 4 representatives who decided that they did not think that they needed to vote in favor of removing this language. And in particular, Brian Kelsey, he felt that his reasoning behind not wanting to vote to remove the language is that it would create a false narrative that there is slavery in Tennessee. And I just think that it is completely ridiculous. And all of these people need to be put on blast. Yes, we're talking about you, Joey Hensley, Janice Bowling, Brian Kelsey, and Frank Nicely. There is no excuse for any type of tolerance for this type of rhetoric in this day and age. And It makes no sense. It just...
He called it fake history.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is ultimately fake history to be telling our voters next year that the 1870 Constitution allows slavery. Well, Tennessee State Senator Kelsey, there was a loophole which states that slavery shall not exist for whatever reason unless for a punishment of a crime. So you could, so theoretically, there's a loophole where people could still be slaves for committing a crime.
Well, I mean, and that also ties into, you know, the prison pipeline that we talk about. And we talk about how there was a, you know, there was a moving of power. You know, you couldn't overtly have slavery anymore. So how do we continue to keep, you know, that system working? They moved it to the prisons. And they buy into this idea of like, oh, it's not slavery. It's just, you know, they deserve that because, you know, they committed a crime or they're being punished. But there's a difference between slavery and somebody, you know, being able to work to make a living. And they don't seem to understand that.
Right. Slavery shouldn't be a punishment for a crime. Slavery shouldn't exist in this country. Slavery shouldn't exist anywhere. And for them to not just immediately understand, like, you know what, there's a loophole here that allows us to have criminals be slaves.
They just don't care.
Yeah.
And I think not even just white people, but people in general have an issue with holding themselves accountable. And I think that's why we see so much backlash and resistance to actual progressive change, because to be able to change, you have to admit there's a problem. And people don't want to admit there's a problem because they don't want to feel like they're the bad guy.
Very that. Yep, yep, yep. Well, luckily the bill passed and there is no longer a loophole in Tennessee for criminals to be punished with slavery.
And hopefully we can take it national.
Yeah. Now we're going to pivot over to local news really quickly. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this story, but there was a Milwaukee County judge. His name is Judge Brett Blomey. I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's spelled B-L-O-M-M-E. If you want to find out more about the story, you can Google it. But basically, he got arrested for having possession of child pornography. And it wasn't just a little bit. Like, there was a lot of files that he was sharing. And what I could see from the article and what I've heard is that he was doing it through Kick under the name Dom Master B.B.
I don't even want to know what that's supposed to mean.
Dom Master Brett Blomey.
Oh, I'm stupid.
His initials. Like, he is so, so dumb. And I feel so bad, first of all, for the people who helped to get him elected,
mm-hmm.
for the people who raised money for him, for the people who supported him. Because this is, and like, because he's a gay man elected to the court, you know what I'm saying? He's a Democrat. Conservatives are going to run wild with the story. It's already been a lot of talk about the story, and I don't really care too much. I can't believe it. What I will say is, not that it even fucking matters, but I did host a fundraiser to raise money for LGBT candidates in Milwaukee last year before the Pandulce. And he was one of the candidates that I did try to help raise money for, but I did not know him from a bag of rice. I don't condone any of the actions and things that he did. And I want to separate myself as far as possible from any kind of pedophile.
So does he oversee the drag queen story? Because it says he oversees drag queen story hour. So is that the same drag queen story hour that's like associated with the LGBT resource center? Or in...
No.
Okay.
So here's the thing. He was the former president of the Cream City Foundation.
Okay.
The Cream City Foundation is one of the major donors to the Drag Queen Story Hour Milwaukee branch.
Okay, gotcha.
He had no involvement whatsoever with Drag Queen Story Hour. He had no involvement in our events. He was not at any of our events. He also did not have any involvement in any of the planning of Drag Queen Story Hour events, or he didn't help us decide what we spent our money on. The Cream City Foundation, a branch of their organization, basically was providing resources and money to us to do things, but he wasn't involved in any way with that.
Gotcha. Okay. Because I was going to say, I did Drag Queen Story Hour back in the day. And I was like, oh, Lord.
We both have. And, you know, like, I am the Milwaukee liaison for Drag Queen Story Hour at the moment. And I don't want anyone to make this false association, but they were trying to dig up anything on him to connect him to children in any way. And because he was the CEO and president, former CEO and president of the Cream City Foundation. They tried to connect the Cream City Foundation to Drag Queen Story Hour and place him in that somehow, but he wasn't involved.
Well, he's trash. And I will say the one good thing that comes out of this is that he's been exposed. And now we can get him, you know, away from, you know, the vulnerable population that he's affecting. And
yeah, he was a children's court judge. And I also heard that he was using his children's court email for some of this shit. He was not only that, he was using his fucking Brett Blomey for judge email with a fucking child pornography file encrypted in it and shit like that. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like he was doing a lot of very, very, very bad choices. And, you know, people like him
need to be put under the jail.
Yes. And he needs help. And maybe there's not enough help in the world to fix his problems. Because a lot of times with people like this, the more power and access they have, the more crimes they do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he also is married, and him and his husband have two adopted children. And right now they're saying that his children were, you know, had no involvement in any of the child pornography and anything like that. But it's just, you know, it's very sad to see. I hope that his husband wasn't involved in this in any way. And I hope the children are safe. And I hope that he doesn't have access to children in any way, shape or form.
I don't wish him well. I don't wish him anything. I just hope that the people who have been affected get the justice that they deserve, and we can not put this behind us, but use this as a cautionary tale of how we should be vetting these people that we put in positions of power.
Yeah. I hate that this feeds into the narrative that, you know, gay men are pedophiles.
Yeah.
Because that's just him. You know what I'm saying? That is not every gay man, and that does not speak for gay and queer people as a whole. There are plenty straight people who are also pedophiles and do even worse things than what Brett Blomey did. So, all right, enough of that asshole. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with pop culture.
Hey.
You're listening to Too Soon Podcast.
So, girl, how you been keeping up with Drag Race? Like, I mean, U.S. is kind of...
I have been trying to keep up with Drag Race. I have been trying. So, how do you feel about Drag Race season 13?
These last two episodes have been weird. Denali should have easily been in the top five, if not the final four. And for her to... You saw what happened, though, like with the whole situation with the transformation and everything.
Yeah, I was really gagged. And I feel like Denali did what she was supposed to do for the challenge.
That's what I'm saying. I thought Olivia, like out of most of the girls, I thought maybe if they didn't like the makeup or whatever the case may be, it was, whatever. They felt like it wasn't blended enough or whatever.
She looked like
Denali. I saw her and I thought Denali.
She looked blended to me. I don't know. Maybe the, you know, the filter on the cameras at Drag Race, they saw something different than we saw, because
I thought she looked fine. I thought the eyes were a little, like, if we're going to be real technical about it, I didn't think she looked bad at all. Maybe the eyes needed a little bit more time, but maybe she just didn't have enough time to, like, do what she normally does.
But also, too, I mean, it was still the right shapes for Denali's stamp. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like she put Denali put her stamp on her face. Whether or not, you know what I'm saying, like, it may have been the most flattering face on her, she still put her face on her, in my opinion. I mean,
she was one of the only ones that I looked at, and I was initially like, that's Denali.
Exactly.
Mm.
So, I mean, it was that. It was, she put her in her iconic costume. And I don't think that they should have taken points away from Denali for how
Olivia performed, you know?
Right.
Even looking at what Olivia did to Denali, I saw the elements of the essence of Olivia, that what she's shown on the show. I felt like it looked like Denali wearing Olivia's drag versus Denali's look. I mean, what Denali did to Olivia, I felt like she was actually channeling Denali, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Very that. So they judged them as groups, and Denali had to lip sync against
Olivia. Yeah.
And I don't know. I think that to me, there really wasn't nobody really outperformed another one. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a toss-up. It could have been either of them.
Like, we all lost, because I didn't want to see either one of them go home. We all lost in that.
We did. Honestly, like 2 weeks ago, it shouldn't have been Denali in the bottom.
No.
Denali should have been safe.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that it was like, even if they judged them as a group, whoever went home should have, or whoever was in the bottom lip syncing, that should have been an individual thing, because what Tina did to Rosé is unforgivable.
Now, ma'am, tell me why I thought that was like one of those, like, you know how they do like the Cosmo Queens or whatever, and then they have like these other ones that are like kind of trying to do the same thing, but they get like girls who may not
like an off brand.
Right. I thought it was one of those, and someone was just like sharing screenshots of it. And then when I found out that that was actually what she presented on the run, I was like, no. We got to say congratulations to...
Yeah, congratulations to Utica and Simone for killing it that challenge, because they both did a great job making over each other.
Oh, yeah. That was amazing. Like, I never would have thought I would want to see, like, a white queen come out in a Baps look. They did it right.
They did. They definitely did, because Baps is black.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't expect... You know, I was nervous for Utica.
I was proud watching Utica, though, because I feel like... She like kind of found like this inner confidence wearing Simone's drag, and it felt like she was proud to be in Simone's drag, and I really like that. But moving forward from that,
last Friday, Utica and Tina Burner lip sync against each other in the bottom. This was the branding challenge where they had to make a soda. Both of them pretty much deserve to be in the bottom. Honestly, though, this week is one of those weeks where it's like, Olivia didn't do well in the branding challenge when she had to put Denali in her brand and her drag. And then she turned around and she didn't do a good job selling her brand for the soda in this most recent episode. And I was kind of surprised that they gave her a pass and she was safe instead of putting her in the bottom. And like, I get that Tina Burner also missed the mark, but it's funny because I have been so ready for Tina Burner to go home.
It's been her time to go. Yeah,
she could have went like 3, 4, 5 weeks ago and I wouldn't have been fazed, but the one week where I was like, oh, I could see her being safe, she was in the bottom, and then she went home, and I was actually kind of gagged, because when I saw Utica, I love Utica. She's very quirky, interesting. She's a great performer. I do not think that she won that lip sync.
I can see that, because like, if I look at it as a whole, like, I get what they were trying to do, and I don't know how much of it was like production editing or anything, but they were really focusing in on like Utica's Utica-isms and how quirky she was being. But I just feel like Tina outperformed her in the sense of just how much she put into the lip sync. She was given choreography and she was like, you know, she was really fighting for it. Not that Utica wasn't. I just felt like I was more... My eyes went to Tina a little bit more.
Ditto. And I do think they tried to like kind of make it seem pretty fair in the edit, but I was kind of gagged. And then from the response of the girls, because if you watch the episode when RuPaul says, Utica, Shantae, you stay, you can see the girls in the back gagged.
Right. But I think it makes sense. They weren't going to let Utica go, because Utica brings this fresh sense of like weirdo high fashion. Like, we've had girls who have been, you know, they've been the weird, quirky girl and they live on their own planet. But Utica's doing that in her own way. But she's also elevating the fashion. Like, she's going to be, you know, like a runway darling after she comes off the show.
For sure.
So I think that's why they wanted to keep her around for a little bit longer, just because of the different angle she brings to Drag Race. But in other news, congrats. We have a UK season 2 winner. Come on, Lawrence Chaney.
Lawrence
Chase
Chaney.
Won in my book. I mean, Chase is still the winner.
Lawrence
but,
Chaney.
Well, but congrats.
See, I didn't watch all of the season. I did watch like the first 4 episodes, and then like I've seen bits and pieces of the other episodes. I actually really, really liked Lawrence Chaney, and I know that a lot of people were like, oh, Bimini was robbed, Bimini should have won. But I didn't get to see a lot of her success towards the end of the season where she was apparently killing it. And so for me, it's like, I was happy for Lawrence Chaney, and I don't really know, like, you know, I don't
give a damn. Taste won. Taste won.
Taste is great. What's up? Welcome back to the podcast. We are coming in hot on pop culture. Where do you want to kick it off, Malaya?
Well, I know exactly where I want to kick it off. I want to talk about colorism. And let's start off by defining some terms. There's a difference between colorism and featureism. So colorism is your skin tone. Okay. Featureism is your bone structure, phenotypically how you look. And they obviously don't understand that on basketball wise. So if you have been keeping up with the show, you would know that they have a castmate. Her name is OG. I apologize. I can't really pronounce her real name. It's Ogum Chijundu. I apologize. But she has been facing a lot of gaslighting and criticism on the show, where they have been using very nasty and racist and colorist rhetoric against her, calling her a monkey and calling her Godzilla and all of these horrible things that we know as people of color not to call each other. And when she finally called it out, they ran a smear campaign against her to make her seem like she was crazy. Being the intelligent woman that she is, she took the time to actually record the conversations in full while they were happening. And because of that, now the show is getting such a backlash. They have canceled their reunion. They do not have a great future for this show. And now a lot of the castmates who were trying to glaze over this situation are being held to the fire. You know, it's just desserts. It's nice to see someone who stands in their truth and will not be bullied, make bullies have to backtrack what they've been doing because they've been exposed. And now the production has been exposed as well. So I would just like to get your insight on colorism and featureism and how it affects the Black community and how we just honestly need to do better.
Us as a community, you know, we've talked a lot about colorism and not so much about featureism, but we have talked a lot about colorism on this show. And I think one thing is that it's a problem in the Black community that I don't think is easily solved, because there's so many of us, you know, who have dealt with things or experienced things in different ways because of our color. You know what I'm saying? The treatment that I get is going to be different from someone who's a darker, deeper complexion. And the way people interact with us will always be somewhat varied. And we have to learn how to accept and embrace ourselves as Black people, and then the differences among ourselves as Black people.
I think one of the big issues is we have to unlearn what we've been taught. I think there is this status quo in the Black community that we try and find proximity to whiteness. So we kind of shun, you know, more Afrocentric features. We don't want to have a wider nose, and we don't want to have fuller lips. And we try and move away from, you know, darker complexion because it's just quote unquote unattractive. And we don't understand the context and the meaning behind it, in the sense of this is something that we've been taught since we were brought to this country. No one told us that Black women were ugly when we were in Africa. But when we came here, they told us that we were ugly. And after generations, now we believe it. And that's where we have the issue. We need to unlearn what we've been taught.
Truly. I know you even talked about us having a panel to kind of like hash it out. I think it would be great to really kind of just like maybe sit and talk about the things that we've experienced, and maybe more so about our commonality and also about our differences, because we have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, because I'm of a lighter complexion, you know, people try to find some way to place a higher value on me. You know what I'm saying? It's like when people ask me like, oh, what are you mixed with? Or like, not to be rude, what's your ethnicity? You know, I'm quick to say I'm blackity black, black, black. I'm black on black. My parents are black. My grandparents are black. I'm black. Because I don't want them to, because what they're trying to do is associate some sort of value to who I am, or, you know, or how, trying to figure out how special they should treat me based on my proximity to
whiteness.
Yes.
That's really what it is. And like, even myself, like, I consider myself to be someone who is light skinned. I don't consider myself to be someone who appears to be any type of racially ambiguous. But just based on me being a quote unquote lighter complexion than, say, someone like, I have a sister who is very, her, she's very deep complected. And, you know, growing up in the Black community, people didn't think we were siblings. And they would ask me stupid questions like you said, like, what are you mixed with and stuff like that. And I'm not even I don't consider myself to be anywhere near light skin, but it's so ingrained in our community that proximity to whiteness is better. And we haven't learned that that's something that we were taught, not something that's true and factual, that we put that on a pedestal.
Absolutely. And we can't. We really have to unlearn that for ourselves and make sure that we, the people around us, we help educate other Black people and our children or our friends or our family that, like, this, you know, higher value we try to put on being lighter is wrong, you know? And I think in a lot of ways we have made a lot of progress in the Black community, but there's still work to be done, as the show has clearly shown.
Exactly. And if they never get another season, I'll be fine with it. I would love to see OG get her own show, because watching her, like, women like her, and I have to bring it up again because, you know, I love her, Monique Samuels, who, you know, she was the brown girl on her season. And I feel like I love the Potomac franchise, but they did kind of treat her differently. They tried to say she was ghetto and she was this and she was that and whatever. I think it had a lot to do with, we're not going to let this brown skin girl come in here amongst this group of lighter skinned white passing women and, you know, be the standout. And that might not be the case because they all identify as African-American women. But you could see that there was a level of disdain for her. And it's hard to separate that from her complexion.
I could go hours and hours about how Robin tried her hardest to prove how Black she was.
I get what you're saying, though. But me playing devil's advocate, I mean, I also feel like that is a symptom of racism trickling down to anti-Blackness, trickling down to colorism. And her being a lighter skinned woman who probably didn't get the same validation from the Black community that she was looking for based on the anti-Blackness that we've been taught, she amped it up to be like, no, I'm gonna be the Blackest in the room because I'm Black too, you know? Mm-hmm. So just my two cents on it.
Yeah. Her DNA ancestry said another thing, honey.
I heard. I saw that. She was mad too, but you know, she's still Black.
Mostly Black.
I'm not dealing with you today.
So yeah, but that's for another story for another day. We have other topics to talk about.
Moving right along.
Yeah, I guess we can talk really quick. The Oscars just announced their nominations, I think last week, and in Judas and the Black Messiah, Judas and the Black Messiah were both nominated for Best Supporting Actor. So it just, it's kind of confusing because who was the lead?
Child, we need answers. Who was the lead? Who was the lead? They're making a movie and they're saying, oh, well, I guess y'all did a whole movie and y'all didn't have a lead actor.
Maybe they just was supporting each other, you know?
You know, right.
I mean, Lakeith Stanfield was confused because the studio campaigned for him to be the lead actor for the nominations. And
he didn't get it.
Yeah. And the fact that they put them both in the same category for the same movie, it's really like, you know,
it's a slap in the face. It's a slap in the face. It doesn't sit right with me because it feels like they were saying, we're not going to let these two Black men who did a phenomenal job in their craft sweep this antiquated award ceremony. And, you know, it was so blatant and gross. It was just like, oh, we recognize that you did a good job, but we're not going to let y'all win Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor. Y'all can have one. And historically, Black men have not been nominated for Best Actor, you know, and it's gross. If you look at the history of how many men have actually been nominated for Best Actor and have won, like it's nothing new if you do your research.
Truly. And what's really upsetting is, like, in most cases, you know, whatever the studio campaigns for you to be nominated in is the category you will get. There are some exceptions, but in the exceptions, usually the studio will campaign for someone to be a best supporting role and the Academy will nominate them for a best lead role position. But it's never been a time where it was reversed, where someone was campaigned for it to be a lead role and was nominated in a best supporting role. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see how this plays out. Maybe it'll be a tie. you know, it's an unprecedented time. So I don't know. I was living for some of the tweets about this. So hopefully we'll see what happens when the Oscars happen. I'm sure we'll be here to talk about it.
Well, I just hope they get the accolades that they deserve.
And no matter what, I do believe it was a really, really good movie. I do think that Lakeith Stanfield and David Kaluuya both did a really great job in the characters that they portrayed, despite all the drama. If you want to Google it, you can, because, you know, people had opinions about Lakeith playing a sellout, and they had opinions about David Kaluuya, a Black man from the UK, playing an American Black man. So, but none of that's really important. When it comes down to it, it's how they did in the roles. And I think that Lakeith deserved the nomination for Best Lead Actor. Mm-hmm. And a drama. So we'll see what happens. In other Hollywood news, the Grammys just happened last weekend. And of course, we got to talk about Beyonce because, you know, she be breaking records.
Hey, world, stop.
Yes, carry on. She literally just broke the record. She is the winningest female artist in Grammy history. She's won the most Grammys as a female artist, and we love to see it. Megan also won for Best New Artist. She's the first Black female rapper to win that award since Lauryn Hill.
Oh, wow. What was that? 98, 99?
Yeah, I think it was 98. I think it was 98, 97, 98. And then Tiffany Haddish also won for Best Comedy Album. And It was the first time a Black woman had won that award since 1986 with Whoopi Goldberg.
That's crazy. That's 35 years. So people, for y'all listening, when we talk about representation, this is what we mean. Mm-hmm. You're telling me in the past 35 years, there has not been one Black woman who has been talented enough to even be nominated. You know, I don't know.
And even if they were nominated, they haven't won in 35 right. years. So, I mean, because there's so many funny comedians who put out comedy albums, especially Black women, over the last 35 years. It's kind of crazy. And then, you know, my favorite political pundit, she's not Black, but I do love her. Rachel Maddow won a Grammy for, I don't even know what it was for, but all I know is Maddow won a Grammy. And I watch Maddow just about every night. She has, I think, right now, the highest rated TV show on cable, like
yes,
outside of news, outside of any show, her time slot, she is the most watched TV show on cable, which is insane.
We love to see it, especially coming from our community.
Mm-hmm. And she, you know, like, it's a liberal leaning media channel, and you know that means less people are watching Fox News, hopefully, and we'll have some more common sense in our country.
Well, I'm proud of everyone, and I hope that they get the accolades they deserve, but I am not happy about the snubs. I am going to be going online and campaigning for Chloe and Halle to get the Grammy that they deserve, and also my baby Doja Cat, because, you know, she should have got more recognition for what she did in the 2020, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, a lot of the girls didn't really get the nominations or awards that I feel like they should have, and especially Chloe and Halle, because they are so talented. Mm-hmm. They Ungodly Hour was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they didn't win any awards or take home any awards, it's really kind of shocking.
Yeah. And I think maybe I'm, you know, misquoting, but I'm pretty sure like Beyonce, was it Parkwood Entertainment? Is that the name of her company?
I'm not sure.
I think it's Parkwood. But I think they had put them in for consideration for some of the big awards, and they got snubbed for even the nominations. And then the awards that they were nominated for, they got snubbed there too. So it's just like, you can't win for lose it.
Yep. It's a real sad day. Taylor Swift was there at the Grammys. She also broke a record. I'm not sure for what. I don't really care. But Beyonce did send her a bouquet of flowers after the award and thanked her for always being so supportive. Aww. And we love to see it. I personally wouldn't have sent those flowers to her, but you know what?
Ma'am, she could have sent some flowers to Nicki. Like, you know, come on.
Nicki still hasn't won an award. Meanwhile, Mediocre Swift
Stop.
It's breaking records. So anyway, I think that's pretty much it. We wanted to, oh, Magic School Bus, really quick.
Oh yeah.
So Malaya, you sent me an image of how whitewashed they get the cast, and it is insane. First of all, people online were already upset because Miss Frizzle is like not even Miss Frizzle. Apparently it's like her younger sister. She let her hair down. She's looking like a whole new bitch. And apparently all of the characters have been whitewashed.
Yeah, they definitely, you know, if these are, I'm not sure if they're supposed to be the same kids from before, but you know, Keisha, if that's supposed to be Keisha, she definitely looks like she has not been outside in a while.
Okay, she's she did the Sammy Sosa special.
Ah,
she is a whole new girl. She went from, what did you say?
Oh, we said, I said she went from Brandy to Doja Cat. You said she went from
Teyana Taylor to Meghan Markle.
Yes.
Yes, because, honey, that is a whole new color on her. They lightened up the other black boy. I think his name is Vincent.
Yeah, I might be getting him mixed up with the kid from Recess, but I'm pretty sure it's Vincent.
That might be the kid from Recess. And there was this really, really funny tweet that I saw. It was basically like, they whitewashed the Magic School Bus so much that even the white kids are whiter. And I thought that was hilarious.
Ma'am.
So I don't think I'll be watching. If I want to get my Magic School Bus fix, I will definitely just rewatch the old episodes.
Agreed.
The original Magic School Bus with the real Miss Frizzle. And I'll leave the new one for the newer generation of kids.
Hey, you know, they're going to do what they do and they can do it over there. Mm-hmm. Oh, his name is Timothy. Excuse me, Tim. I knew that.
Yes. Okay, not Vincent Tim. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with our interview with the one and only Eddie Danger. He is a porn actor, a cam model, a poet. He plays guitar.
He's a feminist.
Activist. You probably know him from Hey Queen. We love him so much. We had such a great time talking to him. So right after this break, catch our interview with Eddie Danger.
So sexy.
You're listening to Tune Soon Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back to the pod. We are here. It's me and Malaya with Eddie Danger, world-renowned entertainer, internationally known on the internet. You can catch him on Just For Fans or OnlyFans, or there's some other places too. I love this guy. I'm so happy to have him on the pod with us. What's up, Eddie? How you doing?
Hey, what's up? Hey, thanks for the glowing introduction. I'm just hanging out. I got off work and I'm pretty excited to be talking to actual people, you know, that aren't trying to fix a fucking scanner. Jesus. Oh, it's horrible in the office. Let me tell you.
Yeah, I bet. Because I just recently learned this from your Hey Queen interview, but you actually work in IT.
Yeah.
When you're not Eddie Danger.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's I mean, no, it's Eddie Danger in the office, but people don't tend to make the relation. I think that would be an HR concern if people walked around talking about sucking dick and sex toy reviews, you know, in the office. But
right.
But yeah. Right.
You being in DC and being there like through the pandemic, how has that been for you? I know the clubs are mostly closed down. Are they all closed?
Yeah. I think all we have is like pictures because the DC Eagles shut down. That was our big warehouse. It shut down and was demolished. Town was demolished like right before that. That was our big nightclub. That was a huge draw. It was like a place that everybody came into. Everybody had a story from that place. Secret Ziegfelds. That's the place I was just referring to. It was this nude male strip club with a drag component downstairs. That shut down and was demolished. JR's was closed. I think all we have is like the Dirty Goose, which is like an underdog JR. Bars, and it's just like little bars at this point. So we kind of lost everything all at once.
Oh my gosh.
But I think that, I mean, not to be looking on the bright side too much during all of this, but there's been a whole lot of reorganization of the community here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we really needed to be thrown in a blender.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And there was a lot of stagnance. And when people were talking about gatekeeping within the community, baby, that was 100% Washington, D.C. That's what you'd see here. So wow. The fact that we lost all the clubs, clubs and like all of these movements to kind of ignite social awareness in people, it couldn't have come at a better time. So hopefully we could rebuild and in a more evenly distributed manner.
Right. And do you think that it'll come back after, like, you think that some of these places will be able to return once we are kind of lifted out of this pandemic?
I want to think so. I want to think that a lot's changed. I know a lot of folks were dethroned, so to speak. And so rebuilding it is going to be a whole overhaul of like the folks coming together as a community and maybe like establishing locations. It seems right now that people are doing pop-up performances in straight establishments or like non-queer spaces. Mm. But yeah, I think that like there's talk of town 2.0, but a lot of that's going to come way down the line because no clubs are opening up again. The shows are all sporadic. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's COVID.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm really optimistic for the community as a whole. So I'm hoping that things are like there's going to be a surge of excitement and energy, like we expect to see after such a turbulent time. You know.
Yeah. Right. A bounce back.
Yeah, I hope so.
So do you think you're going to see a shift in, I guess, like diversity in the scene once things go back to normal? Do you think there's going to be a little bit more representation?
I want to think so. I don't know. I mean, I see like a lot of initiatives coming from a diverse group of people, but I guess we won't know until things actually play out. I mean, right now, I think the performances are just done by little groups of people, but not enough to say that there's any sort of momentum towards being more inclusive at all. You know, Trade is still here, and Trade was one. It was a club that would focus on diversity, although I don't know to the extent of that because I don't think they ever had an AFAB performer there, but I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure.
What's it like being an adult entertainer during the pandemic?
What has that been like during the pandemic? Like, how did it change for you? Because you were already creating content online, but...
Yeah. Oh, it was the best thing for me. Like, this has been the best time of my life. And you know, it's the fact that I love learning things and it's constant information coming from all these different sides. It gave me a lot of time to sit and become an adult, you know? Because instead of, like, using this whole lifestyle as a crutch, being like, I can be a train wreck, totally fine because I do porn. Instead, it was like, I can hunker down, be a little more classy about this stuff and take it seriously, you know?
Yeah.
So I got sober and that was incredible. I just had a year in like last weekend.
Congrats.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was crazy because it was such a huge problem in my life and I didn't realize it. I lost like 50 pounds.
So when you say sober, did you stop drinking or?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah, it was alcohol.
Okay.
My problems were never like narcotics. And,
okay.
And so, yeah. But anyway, so the COVID thing was great because I was like, I'm already freaked out about STDs anyway. So this shuts down everything. We have to be more cautious. People are scared in general. So I noticed that people were more receptive when they started to say, hey, can we get tests before we film something? And like, I could establish long-term relationships. Now there was this one girl that came into my life around Mardi Gras and she's like kind of like a really shy, pretty girl, but super shy. And, she's a half black girl. And so we got to go through this Black Lives Matter movement together. And I've never had a significant relationship with somebody that wasn't artificial, you know?
Yeah.
But with her going through this whole revolution together, she became such a dynamo.
And that was honestly going to be my next question about, you know, the protests and stuff in DC and like what that was like.
Oh, it was beautiful to watch the Black Lives Matter protest from during the daytime to watch it progress. And it was such a celebration in the city. It didn't seem as treacherous, I think, as the news was making it out to be. Mm-hmm. Because then later on in the night, we were spending all day thinking about this. And then we were going to these protests and the sun was out. It was gorgeous. Everybody was playing music and carrying on. Such a good feeling in the city. And then at night, it would turn a little scary. But we understood what was going on. But it was pretty disturbing to watch a lot of my friends that I worked with in these clubs and that I'm personally super protective of, you know, clutching my pearls like I'm somebody's mother, like doing this after hours protesting. And like, it wasn't destructive, obviously, but they were going on Facebook Live and recording the craziness that was going on with the police and like, you know, after hours with the shooting of the bullets and that people running and kind of like hiding behind trash cans and shit because they they didn't know if some car was gonna throw him throw him in the car and drive away. But it was so scary to watch all that shit go down, because I'm like, oh my, go home or something, or just just make it through tonight, you know?
Right. And did you get, I know you got to go out and protest at least once. I think I saw a photo of you out protesting.
Yeah.
What was that like for you going out and protesting?
Well, I'm scared as fuck in general of people. Like large crowds have always scared me. I think it's a lot of the effects of being a stripper in these clubs, because whenever there would be a large amount of drunk people around you, you're afraid of being hit or dragged away or something happening. So I never enjoyed being in public, but I wanted to go out. There's a tiny little gathering that I went to, and I was like, this is beautiful, peaceful, and everything. But then obviously I wanted to see the actual movements going on. So these friends of mine carefully dragged me out of the house, and we could hang out there in the parts that weren't as populated, but you could see where chaos was brewing. It was cool to watch, but I think the overall sense of community was more important. You know how that feeling of pride, when you go to the pride parades or something, and you kind of get lost in the Disney magic of it all, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it felt, you know, here.
Yeah. Yep.
So porn during the pandemic. that's how it was. So this girl and I have been making these videos, and she's glowed up to this incredible dynamo. And I was making these long form videos with her. And so the gay content essentially stopped, because I got very suspicious of gay men all of a sudden, you know. It was like they were still having gangbangs, they were still doing orgies, and this was it was getting scary, and especially people in my little community of strippers and go-go dancers, they were not taking it seriously. So
the gays were advertising this stuff on websites. It's like you could look for quarantine gangbang, quarantine, you know, whatever.
Yes.
It's like
crazy.
Why are you doing this?
Yeah, but with filming studio stuff, I just went, I went to Fort Lauderdale to do this, and they drive you out to get tested for everything, but when they do that, they did the COVID test. Same with Hey Queen, we all had to stand outside and get COVID tested before we went in.
Were you still getting contacted throughout the pandemic about doing professional shoots and stuff? Or did they all kind of take a break?
Well, they shut down for a minute. My stuff got really weird, because I started to focus more on the digital with everybody else. And I was doing sex toy reviews for these companies. And that ended up being a pretty strange arrangement too. But it got me to start using webcams and shit. And I never wanted to do that. But people recognized that I was entertaining enough to have a featured show. So luckily I got to do featured cam shows where they pay me up front and I agree to perform for a certain amount of time. Yeah. And so, but things have gotten progressively better, because I lost weight and suddenly people decided to treat me differently, you know?
I was going to talk to you about that, because you have gotten really lean and cut, and you weren't really big. You just seemed like you were bulky. You know, I was like, oh, I like that he, you know, lets himself carry his weight. Because I'm not attracted to skinny guys.
Yeah.
Typically.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was into the look.
Thank you.
How was your weight loss journey?
It's been so weird. Well, it's all alcohol, you know, all that sobriety did it. And also I went on a vegetarian vegan diet. I tell people I crossed through to the other side, because when I decided I took a bunch of psychedelics, cried my eyeballs out for a little while. It allowed me to drop the nasty habits and focus on not really fitness, but just kind of organizing my life. And the weight just disappeared. It's not like I'm doing anything differently. And I'm sitting here yeah. But it's weird, because people treat you differently. I mean, when I see myself before, I see a sad guy, but I don't see somebody who's unattractive. I see somebody who was a great brand for the time.
But you've always had a beautiful smile, though. You have a smile that's inviting.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Well, that's always, you want to be inviting as a porn actor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise it's going to scare people.
Right. That probably contributes to your success.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you. Yeah, well, it's also that and being a human about it, you know, what I'm noticing is that, especially with the Hate Queen thing, people were prepared to hate watch that thing, you know, because they were it's just some douchebag who's on this show. He swings his dick around, probably has nothing to offer. And then they sucker punch me by asking me about my past. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's a different human you're asking about. Let's go into that.
And, you know, I wanted to ask you about your Hate Queen interview, because I really wanted to talk to you about it and how the experience was for you.
Sure.
Yeah. No, how is it being out there with Johnny McGovern?
Oh, well, they're family to me, you know? They put me up there, they took a chance on me and they said, hey, why don't you come to Los Angeles? So I flew myself out. It happened to be the Trixie and Katya episode where they had a live studio audience and it was terrifying. All of a sudden I was like this has-been stripper who was only known locally. So he's locally a has-been. And all of a sudden I'm in Los Angeles about to give a lap dance to like two of the most famous at the time drag queens. And I was like, this is terrifying. So luckily, like they hung tight with me, you know, and they were just like, if he wants to be weird, let him be weird, you know?
Right.
And so when I got to go back, it was really crazy because I don't fancy myself as like a headline sort of like main special guest. I never saw myself like that, but it was interesting to see what they pulled out for that interview.
I mean, I think that's where I was introduced to you. I think the first time I saw you was on Hey Queen. And then that's how I was like, oh, he must be somebody. They're like, oh, Eddie Danger. I'm like, okay. And then I found out you were friends with James Mansfield. And I was like, oh, okay. So he's a friend of the Queen. So he's like one of those, like,
Starfuckers.
No, I didn't
race
even think
chasers. Girl.
No, I didn't even think that though. Because
I thought they were chasing you.
Truly. But there's this friendship and community between drag queens and porn stars or adult actors. And like, I have always noticed that and thought that was really, really cool because we do kind of live in the same kind of world, you know, we're mascots of the gay community.
Yes, you know? Mascots for sure. And you know what was a mascot in middle school? It was it's a disguise that you put on so you could enter society as a vulnerable person and still maintain that emotional integrity, you know? It's for me, at least, because I was never myself. The person who's talking to you right now isn't on stage. I would assume a disguise, hence the douchey like snapback, or like I would put on this whole elevated sense of like, here's a white douchebag. This is what I'm going to sell you for a minute. And I would perform as that on stage with the vocabulary. And I would embody that persona the same way a drag queen would go out on stage and say, this is who my character is. This is my aesthetic. Let's go. Let's make art, you know?
How did you and James meet?
Oh, that's so like I have like intense relationships with people. Like I'm not the kind of person that can talk to a whole group of people all at once. I like want one person at a time, and he's very much like that as a person. And I remember talking to him. He was in drag at the time, so it was she. She was up there at DragCon, and I was like, wow, this is interesting. And this was during her season, so no, I don't think anybody had seen anything. But we had a conversation, and I think we got a picture together. But it was just a matter of I thought the whole aesthetic was interesting. And also when the show started, I connected with the fact that she was shy on the show. And I was like, well, that's totally normal. Like I wouldn't come in there guns a-blazing. I get that. Then luckily we were booked together for Hey Queen. And I would always message the girls before the episodes, if we were going to work together, and say, hey, I've got this idea for the lap dance. Is this cool with you? Like Stacey Lane, I went and I got an apron and I got some fried chicken. I said, hey, are you cool with me feeding you fried chicken? Because that was like a thing that she was viral for. For at the time, she shoved the chicken in her mouth and pulled out the bone. I loved it. And so basically what with James, I wrote to her, I said, any colors you're thinking, like, are you going to wear a certain outfit? She told me the colors. And I said, I'm thinking about having their puppeteer be a stripper puppet. And she was all game for that. And then we turned it into a little thing. And I think once you have a connection like that with people, like you kind of share the same comedic sensibilities, then you can get into the real stuff. Cause like, I don't have a lot of friends in general, but he's like very sound in the sense that I can be honest with the guy and his husband. And then of course we can switch over into our public personalities, you know, pretty seamlessly.
Like before it was cool to be, you know, a meta queen, James had a full personality. He had like a fully developed character and she was doing things that were different for the time. So it made sense that she got cast on the show. Like, I still don't think she's gotten enough credit for how talented she is. Like she goes out and she figures out how to do everything. Like, so talented.
I feel like, you know, throughout the pandemic, while all of the BLM and social movement and things were happening, I feel like you in particular, you know, were very vocal and outspoken. And like, I think that it was important for you to do that. And I like that you were an advocate for like underserved people in the LGBTQI community.
Yeah.
And that you've been outspoken on that. And
I could talk about that. I like the problem with social media, especially when it's not concerning your direct culture, is you don't want to be performative with a lot of this, a lot of your activism. And I saw a lot of that going on, but I have people that listen to me. And I know that if I can attack things from a perspective that's sympathetic to their values, then maybe I could change their mind without more aggressive persuasion. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So like I can give them a little bit of information that's relatable, at least enough to sucker punch them with the facts of what's going on. And it's often hard because there's this whole separate narrative going on in these small communities with these people where like they don't understand the city folk.
Right.
And you know what I mean? And so like kind of interpreting things the way that I can, at least that's the reason why I was vocal in those scenarios, because it's like I have a lot of people that look at porn models and they say, I'm going to follow the porn model. You know what I mean? Like, who would do that? But like at the time, so many porn guys were coming out as white supremacists or overall COVID deniers or whatever. So it was important to me at least to set an example for other people in my same field to do the same thing and be like, listen, we're going to spread this across the adult industry too. And also during that time, AVN agreed to eliminate the interracial category for their awards, which was hopefully going to have a domino effect across the entire community with the whole BBC issue. I don't know. I'm sure you guys have spoken about this, but like tagging everything Big Black Cock to kind of...
We have not, but that's a huge issue.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we talk about a lot of shit, but it is. It's an issue. It's a thing because... Part of it is that some people, and I think you've touched on this in another interview, some people want to find that representation for themselves. Like yeah. they want to find Black people in porn, or if they're in an interracial relationship, maybe they want to see another interracial couple or,
yeah.
you know, mm-hmm. But there's a line, you know, where it becomes fetishization.
Yeah.
And it's like,
right.
So I'm trying to understand what's going on in porn when it comes to that specific concept. And I go to the Mandingo routine, you know, and mm-hmm. you see like the little white girl who's like, you know, she's always got blonde hair. She's always tiny and dainty. And then they have these giant guys who are like much bigger in every sense, just come in and ravage her. And they fetishize that. It's like, at least my understanding was that it was about bringing African-American men down to like a primal sort of status mm-hmm. in the porn, as opposed to being an active participant. But also I was noticing that everything involving multiple races, if there was a white person, was interracial. Like, is it interracial if an Indian person has a scene with a Black person? I'm not sure if it's regarded the same.
No, they use specific things. Right. It's like Indian man gets plowed by Black guy.
Right, yeah, you know, buzzwords, you know, things uh-huh. people can like Google or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, white people get treated as a standard. So it's just right, like, yeah. you look at like white on white porn and that's just like that's regular. It. We don't have to title that anything.
But they still put the white in it too, because there are white people white guys who only want to see white porn. So you yeah. know, white cock.
Yeah.
White guy plows his Latino right. lover, you yeah, know?
That's like, what I mean, though. It doesn't get like, I feel like when it's like white people with white people, it gets treated as just like, it can just be, oh, it's porn.
That's such yeah, a valid yeah. point. That literally, like, I've never heard that before. And this is insane to have this understanding right now. It's true. And then everything has to be distinguished unless it's against the backdrop of like a Black co-star where they have to say, or like a Mexican co-star where they have to make that distinction. So that was the issue. Like, there were several things regarding race in porn that I think the conversation was open and immediately closed, you know, because people started yeah. to realize how difficult the situation is, you know, in terms of money.
It's like, how do you try to like police how people do this divergent thing? You know what I'm saying? It's like yeah. they want it to be their own little secret world that they can do it by themselves, and they want to be able to like look for that keyword yeah. that they want, and they don't want to feel policed by the porn site, you know, taking away their ability to search for yeah. Big Black cock plows Asian, you know, like
and it makes people money though, because if that's their angle, if they say this is the way I'm going to promote myself as the guy with the BBC, that's important for them right. to make money, because that's their selling point. So I mean, it's kind of hard. I focus on this in the transgender category, because I don't want to tag anything she-male or any of the other words, or you know, that people use
tranny.
Yeah, that people use that word to look for their shit though. So it's like, do you want your content being viewed by people who are interested in it? So my perspective was top-down reorganization. So if you stop using the word where people learn it, because where do you learn about fetishes? You learn from porn sites. So if you start eliminating these harmful words from the vocabulary used in tags or headlines, then maybe the people that are curious about transgender people won't go immediately towards searching for trannies. You know, they would maybe be more sympathetic with their search. But you know what I mean? It's like something that the whole community has to change as a whole. But
yeah.
I don't know.
You did a penis talk show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So this is what happened. They had me. I was like their feature porn star, and I was in this like weird theater sort of situation. It was kind of like a dinner theater thing, and they covered my face and they had me sitting on a stool with two other guys, and it was just our dicks out, and they live streamed the thing for charity. and they basically asked us questions, really weird stuff for sure, but it was totally up my alley because I had just gotten off the release for Hey Queen, got me all like kind of revved up on maybe I can speak more, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah,
it kind of opened you up. It was like it was a warm-up for you, yeah, to start doing more.
Yeah, for sure, because then I don't feel so alien when I start to talk about pansexuality, or I got to tell a story, which of course they don't give a fuck in Wilton Manors. They're all like a bunch of old queens, you know what I mean, like the kind that aren't really taking to social justice very well, but I got to tell a story about, because they were talking about like worst hookup stories, and in front of this audience I could tell a story about this one time I took a First Nations person home with me from a club, and they wanted me to perform a colonialist play, and I was like, that's something we don't talk about, you know. And I got to kind of show that off to the people and be like, this is like a whole different conversation that none of us have had, and I felt, I think, a little more emboldened to bring up topics that are that maybe the audience would feel uneasy about, just because I was like, why not? I know how to talk about this stuff. I can be articulate. I can probably make a decent point, so just raise your voice, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to play this quick little game with you that we play with all of our guests called Too Soon or Too Late. It's going to be rapid fire, and you just give us your opinion if you think it's too soon, like taboo to talk about, or too late, like old news, like, or is irrelevant, I don't want it to happen.
Okay, all right.
Yep. All right, yeah. So first one up is it too soon or too late for more pup content from you?
Oh, okay. Oh, I guess for all the pups out there, I feel really drawn to the furry community in general. I really like that sort of escape from reality, and I think the pup play thing is really fun, but the problem is it's a hard to contextualize a pup scenario without a contributor, you know, without somebody to kind of say you're doing pup stuff. So it's too soon for me to say that I can do more pup stuff, because I think I would need a handler, you know. But I would be down.
This is so weird. I saw pups like pups at a bar. It was like a group of pups, and I was like, oh my god, I think they're so neat. And I had never, before then, I had never had any kind of like fetish for any kind of like specific thing. Like, I was never really like in a leather play or any of that, but I saw pups and I was just like, do I want a pup? So I really, really like
pups. Oh, you want to be a handler?
I would definitely be a handler. Aww. I would definitely be a handler.
It wouldn't be difficult. You're beautiful. You're like a stunning dominatrix. Go for it.
Oh, I would love that. But yeah, so I saw you with the pup mask and I was like, oh my God, if Eddie starts making pup content, God damn it.
Sure, I'll do it for you. I'll do it especially for you.
Question number two, are we going to mass produce and sell Eddie Danger puppets? Is it too soon or too late?
Well, it's funny. I would say too late right now, because when people gave a fuck about me was when I was very closely associated with Hey Queen, and people thought that I was a part of the RuPaul's Drag Race lexicon. So at the time I was being an opportunist, and this company approached me and they said, hey, let's make penis replicas. So they mass produced penis replicas of myself, and I would use it to be like, I'll do an appearance at your club. This is my way of selling myself above like the big stars. I would say, if you hire me, I'll bring 5 copies of my dick and we'll give them out to the audience. And so, you know, it was pretty crazy, but I don't know if I have the audience for the puppetry. I'm always buying drag queens merchandise these days. Like, I buy a new queens product, like probably every month. It's like a t-shirt or like a hat or something, but that's to keep the money in the industry. But I don't feel comfortable doing that myself, although I would love it. And I think maybe if someday people take me seriously as a full-ass man, I could put out an action figure. So it's both too soon and too late, I guess.
Yeah. Cool. So the last one is, and this is kind of like our hot seat question, is it too soon or too late for celebrities to get off of OnlyFans?
I think it's I think too late for them to get off because the standard has already been made. It was a really sad time for us as little content creators, because what we had at a time was we had all the power in our own hands. You know, sure, these distribution companies like Just for Fans or OnlyFans, they get a cut, but it would generally just be an adult platform, and it wasn't Patreon. It was divorced from all that stuff, so right. So there wasn't so much nonsense, and people knew that, like, if you're going to do an OnlyFans, this is for sex workers. And when you're in within the interface, you can go in and subscribe to other porn people. Now, when you have celebrities coming in and disrupting it, like, we all have a kind of a scale of the amount of money we make, you know. But when you right. throw in like an insane surge, like what we saw with Bella Thorne, it disrupts everybody's process. So somebody would contact me and they'd say, "Hey, can you take a picture of your feet with your hard dick and something else?" And I'll be like, "Okay." And you put a price on it and you say you pay this, you watch it. So this girl did that for a potential nude, and it turns out that that it wasn't nude at all, and people want their money back. Now,
yeah.
We have to establish
Bella Thorne.
Yeah, and we have to establish like a protocol for this sort of situation where if somebody right. feels dissatisfied with their purchase. Now, what do I do now if I send something and somebody goes on that track and says, this foot cock porn video that I paid like $300 for a customization, they're busy jerking off, they've saved it. And what if they're mm-hmm. not satisfied? Then they can go run in and dispute it. And there's now a sense of regulation going on, which I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but all I know is that the celebrities did disrupt it and stick to Patreon.
Let's end on some sort of high note. What's something fun you're watching on Netflix right now?
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is the weirdest thing. So I get into these little, like I find inspiration in weird parts of my life. And recently I found My Little Pony. And so with My Little Pony, it's funny because I was like, this is a crazy phenomenon, this brony thing that was going on, and it's way past. Like, I think the whole thing ended years ago. But when I started to look into it, I was like, this is a crazy subversion of masculinity, because you have a bunch of men who are at this point, there are a lot of them who are Nazis, like, and they've gone full bore into hate speech, which is hilarious to think about if you have like these crazy hateful My Little Pony fans, you know. But at the same time, it was like such a strange phenomenon at the time. So I'm watching those episodes, and by the episodes,
what is it called,
My Little Pony?
Oh, it's called My Little Pony, the show.
Yeah, it's just a show.
So this is like a documentary talking about
there's that, they have a documentary, but what I'm watching is the show, like as if it's like a sincere watch through. But then I'm going into the office, because I work in kind of a secluded space. I go into the office and I get to listen to these podcasts from 2012 of all these guys that are like trying to figure out what it means to be a 30-year-old man who likes fucking children's toys, you know, little girls' toys. And it's such a little, like, it's like the Powerpuff Girls, but even more cute. So it's just insane to me to watch these people. And then they have controversies, like there's a lot of homophobia that exists in the mm-hmm. community. But how does that exist when everything is like so married to being a furry and the queer community? And
right.
It's just incredible to me.
This has been so much fun. Thank you so much, so much, so much for being here.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Where can people find you on the internet? Where do you want to be found? Any upcoming gigs or projects or stuff you want us to know about?
Yeah, all sorts of weird stuff. So I've been doing this whole Pornhub thing where I've been making my homemade videos, but trying to make them a little prettier. And I put those out for free. And that's just a little like project. I'm kind of treating it like it's YouTube, which is kind of interesting. And I wonder where I'm going to take it, because there's a lot of weird ideas that I have with puppetry and shit that I'd like to start getting involved with. But that, I'm on Just for Fans if you want to watch porn. But legitimately, I'm the only Eddie Danger except for this big redneck band. So if you Google Eddie Danger, you can probably find whatever you're looking for. And I'm on social media. Now they just changed my name back to Eddie Danger Generosity on Facebook. Like all over the internet, wherever dangers are sold, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Where can they buy your your penis replica.
Oh, okay. So this is it's a different line because one that was like sculpted like to precision and was dirt cheap, like they stopped making that. So the new one that is that's being sold is through my porn boutique, and it's on Twitter. So if you go to @EddieDangerous, because I guess there's already an Eddie Danger on there, then it's on there. So yeah. Okay. That you can go ahead and pick up your replica dildo and have all the fun you want. But I will say it's by no means as high quality as Lucy Stools line, and by no means as interesting as her stuff. So I might say just go with her instead.
Yeah.
Stool samples. Okay,
well, yes. If you're a stool sample or if you want to get a little dangerous with Eddie Danger, there are plenty of options for take home dildos.
Take home dildo. Yeah, you get your souvenir, bring it home with you.
Yeah. Use it however you want, you know. Right. I think it'd be a great like mantelpiece.
Absolutely.
Depending on your home decor.
It's a statement. Yeah, it's a statement piece. Yeah. So, all right. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Bye, Eddie. It was so much fun having you.
Bye.
Too soon.
All right. We're back with Too Soon, and we are getting ready to jump into our topics for Too Late. For this week, we want to know, is it too late for Trump to be out here telling his supporters to get the vaccine? As far as he's been moving, the way he's been moving, you know, he was very anti-science and very anti-just health at a certain point. But now he wants to tell people to get the vaccine. So, Linda, thoughts?
Yeah, it is far too late. You know what I'm saying? Here's the thing. If y'all didn't want to get the vaccine the moment the vaccines became available and Donald Trump was telling y'all not to, don't listen to him now. We shouldn't be wasting vaccines on people who don't want it.
It's natural selection, you know, if that's how you feel.
Truly, because if y'all don't think it's real, what do you need the vaccine for, baby? Let all the minorities and the people of color and the at-risk people who believe in science get the vaccine.
You know, the people who want to be on the right side of history, it's all good. Like, I have no problem. I will take your vaccine for you.
Exactly. You know, I recently got my first dose. I think I told you about that last week. Malaya, are you scheduled to get yours?
I haven't been able to get it, which is crazy because I'm trying to get it through my job. And they had like this whole system where they're doing a lottery for the people. It's dumb. It's really
you
dumb.
You might as well just sign up through Walgreens, girl.
That's what I'm trying to do now. And I haven't been able to get an appointment. So hopefully I will be on the vaccine train. I have been safe as of, you know, throughout the pandemic. You know, I get tested once a week through my job. I do work directly with I don't work directly with the virus, but I do testing for the virus. So I have to get tested once a week. So I've been good, but you know, if I can get a vaccine, I can be better.
Yeah. And also, I will say this, you know, if it takes Trump saying get the vaccine for more people to get vaccinated and for life to return to a new normal, I'm not mad at it.
You're right.
Yeah, I'll cut him a little slack. I still think it's too late. He got the virus and he got treatments that he didn't even want to acknowledge as real. You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, he was telling people to go inject themselves with bleach.
Right.
Like,
he's just trying to kill his whole supporter base. He's like, drink bleach. Don't get the vaccine. Like, what?
Right. So I just honestly, I do want everyone, for my own safety, from a selfish standpoint, I do want everyone to get vaccinated. And I'm very, very tired of hearing people, especially white conservatives, tell me about how this is all a hoax and they wish it would have never happened and they don't believe it and they've never gotten sick. And
microchips.
Yes, girl. The 5G and the microchips, honey.
I can't.
Sign me up.
Well, I don't know what to tell them. I mean, I wish them all the best as long as they stay on their side of the room and I don't have to look at it. You know, whatever happens, happens.
The other topic, it kind of ties into what we talked to with Eddie Danger about. And this one is, Malaya, do you think it's too late for us to stop using racial or racist search terms when we're looking for sexual content online?
I think it is beyond too late. I don't think I've ever met a person of color who has not experienced sexualized racism. And we're too far into modern, quote unquote, society and, you know, times of acceptance to still be using sex as a justification for racism. We just say, oh, that's just, you know, that's just my preference, or that's just my this, that, or the other, my kink. Like, I personally, I it's not for me. I know people have, you know, kinks where they do consenting race play, this, that, and the other, you know, consenting parties, y'all figure that out. That's for you, have at it. But people just randomly jumping into your inbox or whatever it is and being like, BBC, show me that, for lack of better terms, I'm not even gonna say it. Yeah. You know what they say.
Yeah. And luckily, you know, I've been off the app so long, being married and all, and I don't know what it's like on the apps anymore. Girl, but
I'm done with you. Oh, I don't even know if I haven't said this to anyone, actually, but I am actually engaged now, and I should probably get my ass off of the apps now.
Bitch, I am about to end this damn meeting. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yep, it happened today. So, yeah.
Oh, today?
Yeah.
You fucking bitch.
Bitch, I didn't know it was coming.
You know what? You know what?
But you might still see me on the apps, though. we have an understanding.
I am so mad at you, bitch. How you gonna go get engaged? The whole ass engagement to my doppelganger boyfriend and not tell me.
I was going to talk to you about it after, but I figured, you know what? You might as well throw it in.
Yes. Know? Well, I'm so happy for you and Jensen. Tell him I said, hey, and give him a hug for me and squeeze his cheek.
I'll think about it. I mean, you know, things ain't changed. You know, he just, you know, he said, let's change the status. And I said, okay, cool.
Aw. I mean, y'all been together for what? 11 years?
11 years, you know, a third of my life. No, it'll be 8 years. No, it'll be, dear God, how long have we been? It'll be 9 years in October.
Yeah, because it was 2012?
Yep.
Yeah, damn. Congratulations. I'm so happy for you. So when you're looking for something, when Jensen is away, do you like to search Asian Twink Takes Big BBC?
I mean, I search that when he's here. It depends on my mood. I am very open about being, I am very open about, you know, being open to all types of experiences, but no, I will not be searching Asian Twink Takes BBC.
The thing about racist search terms and sexual content online, whether porn or whatever, I think it's very hard to eliminate that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should. I think it's necessary for us to like stop fetishizing and marginalizing people. And especially when it comes to sex and sex work and all those other different things. But it's one of those things where it's like people feel like they're in their own little private world, in their own little, you know, little private space for pleasure. And they feel safe to look for all the bad things that they think about, you know, and there has to be some sort of way where we can combat that, because it leads to this type of fetishization that, you know, people use, especially, I can go on and on about.
It leads to violence. It leads to violence.
It does.
If you think about it.
Yeah. And I can go on and on about gay men, you know, like gay men will see these tropes and porn and see these stereotypes and things like that. And I think straight men do this too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of anyone with a fetish, especially a problematic fetish, you know, they see these things and they use it to, it's like that's what they're learning how to communicate with people from. So then that's when they say these aggressive and derogatory things to regular people online, not understanding that what happens in a porn, what happens in these videos is not real life. And that's not how you approach people. That's not how you talk to people, especially someone of a different race or different, you know, ethnicity or whatever.
Well, I also feel like a lot of times, like these people who, you know, live out these fantasies online, they don't view the people that they're fetishizing as human. And when you dehumanize someone, it's easy for you to not respect their autonomy. So you view them as an object. So if I'm looking at you as something that I use for my sexual gratification, you know, I'm not going to take the time to try and understand you as, you know, a fully realized and fleshed out person. So I don't think they're even really looking at these people through the lens of, this is someone I value, or I want to have a relationship with, or I understand your struggle. No, I view you as something that today I'm feeling a little dangerous, you know? You know, I want the thug who's going to, you know, jump me and then bang me, you know, down on 15th in Harlem. And this is it's graphic and it's gross. But this is like the mindset that you have to combat sometimes as a person of color navigating, you know, social media and dating. And it's very prevalent amongst gay men.
You know, it's like they're trying to live out their sexual fantasies. That's built on a fetishization.
Yeah, I hate that word. I can never say it.
Fetishization.
Something like that.
You know, it's built on that shit. And they treat you like you're not even a real person. Like you're just, like you're a character in a game or something. You know what I'm saying?
It's like, there's a disconnect from reality.
It is.
And, you know, I know there are people who, you know, they have their kinks or whatever the case may be, more power to you. But there's a difference between that and someone who's just like randomly like, oh, I just met you 5 minutes ago and, you know, I want to call you everything but a child of God in reference to your race, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, just my two cents.
Ebony BBC.
Girl, that's light.
Rams. I know. I'm just
you being just real nice because I've seen some things and I'm just like
and yeah, there's a lot of things, and we covered a hefty amount of it too while we talked to Eddie Danger. So we'll have to put out that full interview too at some point. It's too late to stop racial search terms because I don't know if there's even a realistic way to do it, but hopefully maybe it's never too late. Maybe we can still work on some sort of way to create change, but I just don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, I agree. It's too late to stop because it should have been stopped. And, you know, I don't know how to, I mean, I know how to start the dialogue. I don't know how to change people who are disconnected. And I think that's where we see a lot of the issues. It's like people who genuinely do not get it, which is not an excuse for them, but we don't have time for your misunderstanding, you not being a fully realized person who knows how to interact with others. That's not our problem. But yeah, it's too late.
All right. I guess we should wrap it up.
Yes. Well,
Malaya, you got any gigs coming up? Anything you want to talk about?
Girl, I ain't doing nothing special. What am I doing? Oh, stay tuned. I'm going to be doing bingo for Marquette University. It's going to be a digital show, so I'll get that information to you. I don't have it on hand right now. I'm still doing the showdown at This Is It, you know, or Trixie's It now. That's what they call in the bar now. But I'm happy about it. You know, I'm really excited. The next challenge is musical theater. It's going to be a blast. I might have a special guest. She's not on this podcast right now. but, you know, it's going to be good. And, you know, we won the first round. So let's see if we can keep this streak going.
Yes. I am going to be at the Trans Visibility March on March 27th. It's a Saturday. And it's put together by El Halo, I believe. And other women leaders in the trans community. So I'm really, really excited about that. I'll be there as a marshal. You know, I do identify as non-binary. Do not call me a man.
Mm-hmm. You better let them know.
So I'm happy to be a part of it and to I'll be out in drag and I'll be stomping and marching and celebrating trans visibility.
Oh, one last thing I forgot.
Yeah.
I will be, I'm going to start hosting again. At okay. Club 5 starting in April. We don't know in what capacity yet, but I have my first dates coming up. So I'm going to keep y'all tuned to that. So, yeah.
You have to let us know. Give us some dates so the gays can come. Y'all. If you want to support this podcast, you can Venmo at Linda Joe at LENDAJO and just put a microphone emoji in the description or in the little note so I'll know to use it for the pod so we can pay for our podcasting services and shit like that. We'd love to be able to like at least just break even with the pod and hey. Hey, that would be fucking amazing. So yeah, for sure. If you want to help us out, make sure you do that. Eventually, I'll try to get some ads and sponsors and stuff, maybe. We'll see what happens.
That would be amazing.
Right? If you want to follow us, please follow the dolls. You can follow Malaya Marvel at Malaya Marvel. You can spell it for them because I can't spell that shit.
M-A-L-A-I-Y-A, Marvel like the superheroes.
And you can follow me at Linda Joe on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and at Linda_Joe on TikTok. I TikTok once a month. And yeah.
She has millions of views though. So y'all better go check them out.
Yeah, I'm there sometimes.
Bro, can you believe it's been a month though? I just thought about that. It's been a month.
Oh yeah, it has. This episode will be our fourth episode and it'll be our first full month of content.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ow. Look at that.
Proud of us.
Yes.
All right, girl, I'm gonna shut up.
And we ran out of time for James Mansfield. We'll try to have her next week.
We'll see if that happens.
Sorry, James.
We love the dolls.
We'll let you know when we have time to squeeze you in.
Ooh, okay, we're cutting that out.
JK, we love you, James. Oh, yeah, and also you can follow the pod, too. Follow the pod at Pod Too Soon on Twitter and Too Soon Pod on IG. And, you know, it's very simple. Catch us next week for some more fun topics on news that happened last week.
And this has been
Too Soon.
We'll see y'all.
Bye.